You're listening to Good Day World on the Podcast Network. The future is in your hands. But what would I know? I'm just a machine.
G'day world, you're listening to Cameron Riley on the Podcast Network. It's G'day World 330, recorded towards the end of June. Let's see, it's Sunday night. It's the 29th of June 2008. My guests tonight are Catherine Schmidska and Matthew Landauer from openaustralia.org. Now, this is a site that launched about 2 weeks ago and absolutely blew me away. It's kind of based on a site that was launched back in 2004 in the UK called theyworkforyou.com, which I only discovered a couple of years ago. But it's basically a site that tracks your local politicians, what they say in Parliament, how many days they turn up to Parliament, how they vote on particular bills, etc., and provides a much higher degree of transparency to the political arena for the average Joe. And I remember at the time emailing, when I first heard about They Work For You and checked it out, I sent them an email and said, look, I would love to import what you do to Australia, and never really heard from them. But that's okay. I had enough on my plate. And so I was blown away when I heard about They Work, that Open Australia had launched, which is doing essentially the same thing. They've only been up for 2 weeks. They're in a beta phase still, but already getting great feedback. They've got positive coverage from Crikey, from CNET, from Andrew Bartlett, from the Greens, and from the Podcast Network, of course. So I shot them an email, said, hey, I would love to have you come on and tell us a little bit about the background, how you pulled this together, and where you're going to take it in the future, and what we can do to help. So earlier this evening, I had a conversation with Kat and Matt. Was surprised to learn that they're not Australians. Kat's a Pom and Matt's a Yank, but they've both got their permanent citizenship here and have, you know, pulled off probably the most exciting thing to happen to democracy in this country since the invention of the Democrats by Don Chipp. Speaking of which, it was obviously the final speeches for the Democrats in Parliament this week. Andrew Bartlett gave the last speech by the last Democrat in the Senate. And I think, as I've already said on the show, I think there's a lot we can learn from the Democrats, both good and bad, about setting up a minor political party in this country. Obviously, it was hugely successful, particularly in the first 20 years. And anyway, there's probably other times to have that. I'll have to get Andrew on to chat about it in more detail once he's had a chance to catch his breath. Anyway, let's kick on with my interview with Kat and Matt. Oh, wait, before I go, a couple of plugs. Don't forget to go buy a copy of Peter Elliard's book, Designing 2050, published by TPN Text. Get it at designing2050.com, probably one of the most important books you will read this year. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the TPN weekly email so you get a weekly update every Monday on all of the shows that have come out by TPN so you don't miss any of that TPN mint-flavoured goodness. Okay, here's the interview. Oh yeah, just one more thing I forgot to mention. The Kat and Matt's MacBook fan, or their Mac fan, was very loud. There's a lot of hissing in the background. They didn't have any headphones, so I've tried to dampen the hissing in the background as much as I could, and I've put some music tracks on in the background to try and make it easier to listen to. So if you're wondering why there's music playing in the background, which is unusual for this show, that is why. I hope you can live with it. It's a great discussion. So here it is this time. Seriously, this time I'm really... Thank you very much for chatting with us today, Catherine and Matthew. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how Open Australia came to be?
Well, basically it all started back in like 2004, I think. We were We'd been living in Australia for a while, but we went back to London for a little while, and a friend of ours, sort of invited us along to this techie conference that was taking place somewhere in London. We had no idea what it was, but we kind of went along. It was like a few pounds to get in or something. And there were like all these different talks about all sorts of weird and wonderful things, and sort of hackers kind of hacking Bluetooth, and people doing urban exploration, and this guy who somehow built a clock out of like a Marks and Spencer's prawn sandwich and a BBC Micro attached to a big analog clock. And there were all these weird and wonderful things. And one of the talks we went to was actually the launch of They Work For You. And we were completely blown away by it, realized the potential of the thing. And when we came back to Australia, we went to all our friends and kind of went, hey, we've got to do this here. We've got to do this here. Like, someone's got to do it. And everybody's like, yeah, it's a great idea. It's a great idea. But no one sort of grabbed hold of it. No one went and did it. So anyway, a few years passed. I think it was November of 2007, last year, where the company I was working for at the time had this sort of charity leave scheme where you could take a week to work for charity. And I kind of decided to take that week to build a very, very, very crude early prototype of what ended up becoming Open Australia. And basically after that first week, I realized that it could work, and it wasn't actually going to be a gigantic amount of work to basically take what the They Work For You people had done and essentially adapt it for Australia in the kind of minimal amount of work possible. So we've kind of taken the absolute shortest route to getting a result. And so at the end of that week, I realized it was possible. And then over the course of the next 6 months, I've just been spending all my spare time hacking away at it, getting it to work. And Kat has been helping organize everything around it, and more people have come on board and helped with kind of setting up all the sort of technical infrastructure kind of stuff, all the servers and all that kind of stuff. And it's sort of grown from there, really. And then we kind of did an early sort of closed beta testing where we kind of got, you know, a small group of people to kind of test out the sort of early stage of the website. And then as of 2 weeks ago, we launched it to the public, still in beta. So like, it's still early days in a sense. You know, there's still, the site isn't perfect. There's an enormous amount that's left to do, but we kind of felt like we couldn't hold it back any longer. It was like, it was a useful thing as it was, even in its, you know, even in its kind of infant stages, essentially. So yeah, that's where we are. We've launched it. We've gotten a huge amount of positive feedback about it, and it's been pretty overwhelming, actually.
Matt, I just want to go back to the bit before. The employer that you worked for gave you a week off to do charity work again.
Yeah.
What kind of company does that?
It's pretty progressive. It's a company called Rising Sun Pictures, who are a visual effects company. Kat actually still works for them. They had this sort of idea of like, well, you know, we don't want to give money as a company to a charity in a bulk. So they kind of decided that their employees were kind of the best people to decide how that money should be spent, essentially, because they're giving people's time. So everybody that's there, that's been there for a period of time, can take a week off to work for a charitable organization of one sort or another.
That is fantastic. Yeah. All right, so let's get back to Open Australia. That I first heard about They Work For You a few years ago, and I remember checking it out and, like you, just being blown away by what was being done there. And I've hoped to see something similar come to Australia ever since. I remember trying to shoot some emails to the They Work For You people a few times and said, look, you know, I run this media company and I'd love to help out porting this to Australia, but they're obviously busy. I never heard back. Tell me what it is about Open Australia that has sort of motivated you to get involved and put so much of your time and energy and effort getting it off the ground.
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, but I mean, for me, I think transparency in government is pretty key. Like, transparency in society generally is a very positive force. You know, it allows people to make good decisions. It allows a certain degree of kind of equality, and that's something that I value. And in a way, on a pragmatic level, I think the thing that motivated me to do this particular thing was that, you know, these people in the UK who set up They Work For You had been very kind of forward thinking in the way that they started the project. They've right from the outset, they made it very clear that they wanted their project to be kind of a beginning of things and a platform on which other people could build. So they decided right from the start that they would open source all the software that they wrote in building their site. And really that has made Open Australia possible because, it's been a lot of work, but in reality, it's been such a small amount of work for the potential gains to the whole political process. You know, the ability for normal people to kind of find out what's going on and become better informed about what their representatives are doing and the whole political process. And actually just, you know, rather than it just seeming like this big monolithic thing that they have no way of kind of getting into, there's a way, you know, by having a website that's really geared towards what people actually need, that they get something useful back from it in a very immediate kind of way. And so to do that with the small amount of work that it's taken to get so far, you know, felt like a very easy thing to do. And it felt very good the whole time through it. It's felt very good just working on it, really.
Now, Catherine, we were speaking earlier, neither of yous, that's an Australianism. Neither of you were born in this country. You're a POM and Matt's a Yank. What's up with that?
Oh, it's quite well. There you go. That's another interesting aspect of it. As Matt said about when we went to the launch 4 years ago, we'd been living here for a while. I've been here since November 2000, and we came back telling all our Aussie friends, "Yes, you should really be doing this for your country," and we kind of felt a little bit strange even about. About getting into something like this when it's not our place. We were visitors at that time, but we more recently applied for and got permanent residency. And I guess that just changes the way that you think about a place. Once you've made a commitment to be somewhere, it feels like you can get involved and no one's going to say to you, "Oh, what are you doing? You're an outsider. You must have some kind of angle on this. Why do you want to do it?" And it's purely, well, we live here, we want to engage in this place, and they've got it in the UK, it's fantastic, so we should have something at least as good as that for ourselves in the country that we've decided to make our home. So
I think it's
naive of you.
Well, I think it's exciting that a POM and a Yank can come out here and actually, you know, create the most exciting thing to happen to democracy in this country for a long time. In fact, I think that's what Sarah Stokely at Crikey called it. She said it was the best thing to happen online for democracy in Australia this year. And it's got coverage from CNET. The Greens have been speaking very positively about it. So it's already, just in a couple of weeks, got a huge amount of response. But I'm really interested in how you're funding all of this and getting all the work done. I know that They Work For You was set up by a registered charity in the UK, UK Citizens Online Democracy, which has obviously got some funding behind it. Have you guys raised any money to help you build this? Have you had any contributions, or are you just doing it off your own back?
Well, so far, our entire spending, I think, has been $30. And that was on registering the domain, I think, and also getting, what was it? No, yeah, it was registering the domain and having DNS hosting in Australia. So you know, we've everything we've done, we've kind of done with just, you know, our time and other people's time, and our server space has been donated by a company in Sydney, and you know, but that's just that works for us now. But really we want to allow this thing to grow and to continue, and really, I think the obvious thing that we need to do is set up a charity and go down the same route as My Society in the UK, and that's we're working on that right now, to actually form a charity, and again, we need help with that, in terms of, you know, legal advice and all that kind of stuff. So if there's anybody out there, when that's in place and we're a charity, we're actually in a better position then to raise money. You know, we have a donate button, for instance, on our website, but right now that goes off into a PayPal account that we can't actually access until we're a charity proper. And so we've gotten a few donations from people through that, and that, you know, once we're established as a charity, that will definitely help get us off the ground, you know, because there's going to come a point where we have so much traffic that we can't get this stuff for free anymore, and you know, we'll have to get a server and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And ideally we want to be in a place where we can actually pay for a developer or two to be working on this full time, to carry on developing this stuff for everybody's benefit.
So let's just explain to people who aren't overly familiar. I gave a bit of an introduction to it, but let's go into a little bit more detail. So at the moment, you're scraping Hansard, the record of what gets said in Parliament, and making that accessible in a variety of ways. How do you get access to Hansard? Is it produced digitally? Is there an API for Hansard?
Basically, there's a website, which is aph.gov.au, which is the website of Parliament House, essentially, and they publish the entire Hansard on that, going back to like 1981, I think, and it appears when they speak in Parliament on a Monday or a Tuesday, it appears the next working day at 9 o'clock in the morning on their website, and then at 9:05. A little program kicks off on our server that downloads all their pages and reformats it and kind of downloads it and extracts, you know, who's talking and what time they talked, and figures all this kind of stuff and unravels it all. And that's the scraping, parsing bit.
And the reason that we do that is because the information as it comes out from APH is basically a really bloody long PDF. So it's like just scrolling down, pages and pages and pages of information. So what you end up with is something that looks a little bit more like a chat or a forum, and you can then just search through it, and it's a lot easier. That's kind of the basis of it.
And I know I've been able to go up there and type in my postcode and see who my local MPs are, and I've been able to sign up for email reports whenever they say something in Parliament, which is terrific. I have to figure out what I do with that information, but just getting access to it's a great start. And we've had some discussion on your blogs and on my blog about this Register of Members' Interest that you've been trying to get access to. Why don't you explain to people what the Register of Members' Interest is?
Okay, well, the Register of Members' Interest is a 7-volume set of pages that exists in an office in Canberra. Basically, if the interests are pecuniary interest. So any money that any financial things that a representative is associated with, and it comes down to things like they write down their houses and cars, who they bank with, if they've got like any big financial interests anywhere, right through to if they are shares or if they've got an association with a company. There are some restrictions, like I don't think they're allowed to be directors.
So I mean basically it's designed as a way to ensure that that any potential conflicts of interest that representatives will have are recorded publicly, so that you know that they can't so if they are influenced by anybody or you know any company or association, that in some way that information is recorded for the public record, and what we're trying to do is gain access to that information. Now what we expected is that information would be available online in a similar way that the Hansard is available online. So we kind of expected, yeah, it's probably available online, just not in a particularly useful format again. But what we actually discovered is that, yeah, it's not available online.
It's not even an electronic document.
Yeah, it's 1,500 pages of handwritten forms, essentially. And it sits in an office in Canberra.
Which, if anyone would like to go, is open between the hours of 10 till 12 and then 2 till 4 again in the afternoon on sitting days.
Of course, the vast majority of the population doesn't live and has no good reason to go to Canberra.
Exactly. Yes. And of course, supposedly it was only, we found some report that said that it was actually only looked at in that office like 90 times last year.
Was 91 times. And they only had, I think, one complaint about conditions of access, although they didn't table the exact nature of the complaint, but didn't seem to think it was important.
Now, Kat, I think you mentioned on Twitter today that there's been some positive movement in respect to getting access to that.
Yes, they're sending us the entire 7 volumes, so we can actually start to scan that in. Maybe pass some OCR software across any of it. Some people actually do.
How many pages?
Approximately 1,500.
You're going to scan 1,500 pages?
Yes.
Yep.
That's the plan.
So we actually heard from somebody who has been dealing with somebody with a bulk scanner, which we're hoping, fingers crossed, that we can get access to and do it that way. Otherwise, it's going to be a bit of a long job. Yeah.
And then I guess the idea is that we'll in some way or other crowdsource the rest of the transcription job. So people out there who want to help transcribe that information, please contact us. You know, and then the idea is that we have about 2 months, I think, until Parliament sits again, and at that stage. The committee that kind of that looks after and organizes the register will meet again, and then they'll be discussing us putting that information online. So we don't have official permission as yet to put that information online, but I don't expect that to be a problem. I mean, it's fairly obvious; it's a public document. There's obvious concerns that people will have that document isn't tampered with in any way and stuff, and we're gonna try to put safeguards in place to make sure that that the transcription is checked and so forth, but basically we're gonna go ahead as if in 2 months we'll be able to publish this stuff.
Yeah, I don't think there's any sense that it's going to be much of a problem. Otherwise, I don't think they'd be sending us the 1,500 pages otherwise.
Well, you could just put the transcription in the closet in your bedroom and tell them that it's available for access
at
9 a.m. and 5 p.m. if they want to check.
We live in Glenbrook. If you'd like to make your way out to the mountains and visit us between 6 and 7 in the morning and then 7:30 and 8:30 at night. So, be fine too.
So let's talk about some of the other features that you would like to integrate into Open Australia over the course of the next couple of years. What are your plans for it?
Well, I think in the short term, our plans are really just to get many more, much more of the Hansard data available, because right now there's certain parts of it that are missing. For instance, the voting information.
And we're still talking about the House of Representatives Hansard as well.
Yes, yes, and then we also want to get the Senate in there, obviously. We'd love to get things like the Senate committees, and we'd love to get the states in there as well. But then, in terms of the website, there's a whole host of potential avenues that we could go off into. I mean, we certainly want to make services for allowing you to contact your MP. And for allowing your representative to write to people sort of in a broad sense, and one reason for having that kind of service on Open Australia is that, for instance, if you have your representative's email address, which you can look up. It's available on if you go to aph.gov.au and you can navigate your way around. It is there. Let's say you find that, you can email them. And, you know, that's great and it's a very important thing. But in a sense, in a broad sense, the representative is not accountable for that email. In the sense, like, if they don't reply to that email, the only person that's upset by it is the person that sent the email. So one idea, which is again just is emulating what They Work For You in the UK has done, is to have a service where through the website you can write to your representative, and then the website doesn't in any way ever, you know, you don't ever see that communication with your representative. That communication is completely private. Nobody reads that. But what you do get back, if you just look at the website, is statistics about how much they've replied to emails. So, for instance, you'll get a thing saying, you know, this representative replies to 75% of emails sent to them through Write to Them or whatever. So it's an idea of kind of coming up with simple services that increase, you know, visibility about how good a job someone is doing, and allowing, you know, normal people to understand the what their representatives are doing and communicate with them better, and also actually help representatives communicate better with the people that they're representing.
Have you had any feedback from sitting members of Parliament about this since the site launched?
The only things we've seen so far are just little corrections, like you spelt my name wrong or I didn't say that. I think there was one update to the Hansard a day later where a speech was wrongly attributed in the House, and we got some feedback that had now been corrected in the Hansard. So. Yeah, I mean, I think they're knowing it's there, but I don't know how many of the current members know it's there, or whether they're just waiting for a particular reason why they might want to contact us. For example, if there's some information that they need or that they want to tell us about.
There's certainly a lot of people with emails in the aph.gov.au domain that are on email alerts now. So people are using it, whether they're saying that publicly or not, I don't know. I mean, it's only been 2 weeks, so I would expect that over time, what will happen is that people will initially see it as a little bit off-putting, because there's people that are not part of, you know, government and not part of the system that have set this website up. They'll be a little intimidated by that, I think, at first. It's understandable, but then I think as people realize that it is meant to be something that is impartial and useful for everybody, that actually representatives will start using it themselves and will also actually, I wouldn't be surprised if within a matter of months we have representatives putting links to Open Australia on their websites, for instance.
Well, I saw that Andrew Bartlett, who was a Senate member for the Democrats, linked to it during the week, and he wrote quite a bit about it and participated in some of the discussion I had on my blog about the Register for Members' Interests. So even though his term has now ended, at least there was one sitting member that was quite excited about it. So do you consider yourselves to be political activists?
I don't. What about you?
No.
No.
I think what we're doing is allowing people to engage politically, and that's everyone from people who just want to know a bit more about what's going on to people who read what goes on in Parliament and understand more how it relates to them. I mean, think with things like Fuel Watch and a few other issues that are coming up at the moment, people have got a very much closer idea that what goes on in the House is directly related to them. So many times the things that people are talking about, people think, oh, you know, well, what's that really got to do with me? And at the moment we've got a number of issues around where people really can feel the direct link to their own day-to-day lives. So I think it's really good to just even on that level for people to be able to say, okay, well, I know they're talking about stuff that does affect me, so I want to see, you know, how this turns out today. On the other hand, there are lots and lots of organisations or collections of people with views from, you know, any end of the political spectrum who might find this service useful. And that's from researchers to activists to whoever, really. And it really is for everyone. So you can take the information on Open Australia. There's APIs for people to
there's
APIs coming for people to be able to take that information and do whatever else they want to with it in order that it serves their research needs or their particular goals. So it really is just a service for everyone, activist, researcher, journalist, politician. I don't think it's a activist in that sense. If I was to describe it as anything, it's advocacy for democracy.
I feel like a toolmaker, really. I've always been interested in politics, and I do believe that politics is part of people's lives, but I certainly wouldn't consider myself an activist. I've never been involved in any activist organizations or anything like that. I've never been a member of a political party. But this is, you know, this is something, I guess, that's very dear to my heart, you know, in a sense that I think a crucial part of that of decent and informed and intelligent political debate is to have access to information that's easy access to information for everyone, and that's what this is about. So I just feel like I'm enabling, it's all part of enabling other people to follow up the things that they're passionate about, you know. And in a sense, the passion of Open Australia is about free access to information, you know, and understanding how people use information as part of a political debate.
You know, it's been one of my rants for probably the last year or so that the internet is like any other tool. It is what we do with it. And, you know, we can use the internet for talking about the latest piece of, I don't know, the latest toys that have issued from the Steve Jobs reality distortion field, or, you know, we can use it for porn or World of Warcraft, or we can use it to actually change the world. It's an amazing tool that's been given to us by Vint Cerf and Tim Berners-Lee and a variety of people over the last 30 years. And I guess what excites me the most about this is here is another example of a couple of geeks who have actually used the internet in a manner that could have a dramatically significant effect on the way that the political arena works in Australia. And I want to congratulate you both. Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And if there's anything I can do to help, if you need hosting, if you need exposure, if you need anything, please feel free to drop me a line, and I'm more than happy to lend my meager resources to help you guys get the word out.
We'll definitely be asking you about those.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. So remind people of the URL before you go.
All right, www.openaustralia.org.
Kat, Matthew, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.